නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So as you all know, we are discussing Chabbisodhana Sutta, which we can literally translate as sixfold purity. Anyway, as I mentioned, this sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya only contains fivefold or five kinds of purification, and according to the commentary, the sixth one seems lost during the transmission. Anyway, there are few suggestions for that, and again it is fairly verified across the Majjhima Agama books, which were preserved in the China and Tibet. And so by now we are going through one by one these different kinds of purification. So the idea is here one particular monk is declaring that he is an arahant, and then the other monks have to verify that. So Buddha mentioned that how to verify it. It is not that we are going to immediately reject, and we are not going to immediately accept. Rather, we are trying to verify whether the statement is correct, whether his declaration, whether his claim is a proper claim. So that is what this sixfold purity is meant for. And one by one Buddha is going through, and basically it is very much like related to the practice, how this particular monk has practiced. So if he has diligently practiced, so it won't be a big issue for him to answer these questions. So that is why one by one Buddha is explaining. So the first one is with respect to the detachment of four ways of expressions. So basically when one is dealing with the outside world, so he has to communicate about his own experience. So at that time, mainly four kinds of vohara, or what we call as the four ways of expressions, are being used. Basically through the eyes when one is communicating, I mean with the outside world, and when he is seeing various sights, how he has to dealt with. And again, when one is using one's ears to listen to various sounds, one he has to deal with. And then one, how one may be communicated that with the other world. And then from nose, tongue and the body, when one is sensing something, how that can be communicated. And again, when a particular mind object comes to the mind, how one can cognize that and how can that be communicated with the others. So how you have handled this part so that your fetters are being uprooted and the asavas, the taints are being eradicated. So that is the kind of question asked first. And then if it is successfully answered, then Buddha mentioned, okay, you can be happy about it, but don't stop there. You better ask another question. So the second question is with respect to the five aggregates of clinging. And you know there are five aggregates: the form aggregate, feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. And how one has dealt with these five aggregates so that one's taints are being uprooted. So that is the second question Buddha asks us to ask. And then if one has properly practiced, then he can easily answer that question as well. Then the third question is with respect to the six kinds of elements. That's another way of explaining this whole so-called person, or this so-called individual, or this whole experience. One can explain through the six types of elements. So when one is dealing with the world using these six types of elements, how one was able to abandon all different kinds of taints? So that is the question Buddha asked us to ask as the third question. And then fourth question. So if he answered that properly, Buddha mentioned, okay, you can be happy, but don't stop there, you better ask another question. So the fourth question is related to the internal and external sense bases. Through the eyes we see various sights, through ears we hear various sounds, through the nose we smell various odors. Through tongue, we taste various flavors. Through the body, we sense various different tangibles. And through the mind, we cognize various mental objects. So this is how we are using internal sense bases and the external sense bases. So there Buddha mentioned, we better now verify how this particular person, each and every sense base have handled, so that his stains are uprooted. So that is what actually we discussed last time in detail, how he has properly guarded his senses and again recognized various defilements arising there, and so that he is preparing himself for training himself so that his mind is getting liberated. And after answering that question, Buddha mentioned, okay, saying good, one may delight and rejoice in that bhikkhu's words. Having done so, a further question may be put thus. Now the fifth question Buddha mentioned like this. So that is actually with respect to the eye-making, mind-making and eye-conceit. Freedom from any sense of eye through proper cultivation of the path of training. Basically the whole question and answer is based on this particular theme. Because typically we think that there is an individual inside, there is a person inside, there I am living. So that kind of eye-making, mind-making, considering that I am here, considering that I belong something, I have something, I possess something. So all sorts of different kinds of concealment is available. And so Buddha actually has preached Dhamma even to uproot that. Now the fifth question is with respect to this. And it is coming like this. Friend, how does the Venerable One know, how does he see, so that in regard to this body, with its consciousness and all external signs, eye-making, mind-making and the underlying tendency to conceit have been eradicated in him? So basically, so this is the question asked. How one would eradicate taints, eye-making, mind-making, all sort of things. How when you are dealing with the outside world, how you did that? So then actually the answer is fairly descriptive. So it is very much based on the Samatha Pubbangama Vipassana, we can say. A complete practice is mentioned here, kind of a fairly elaborated answer. So it actually started with the how one can going forth. Say for example, a particular person, a lay person, he hears Dhamma and he listened to Dhamma, and now he understood, okay, in order to practice this Dhamma, I better become a monk, I better become a nun. So this is the approach actually explained in this part. So he mentioned then, so I had so much of wealth, I had different kinds of relatives, I have abandoned them all and I have gone forth. Now this is a kind of a stepwise process, not just immediately it happens. One hears the Dhamma and then he has some faith on Dhamma, and later he understood, okay, if I want to practice diligently, wholeheartedly, fully dedicated myself to the Dhamma, I better become a monk, I better become a nun. So that's how the first thought happened to him, and then he approached a particular monastery, a particular group of monks, and then he ordained as a monk. And then actually the whole sila part, the morality part is explained. So in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, it is referred to Kandaraka Sutta. I have extracted that part and added here. So basically all the different kinds of precepts are mentioned, and that is actually the morality. So he is now purifying his sila. So abandoning the killing of living beings, he abstained from killing living beings. And with rod and weapon laid aside, conscientious, merciful, he abides compassionate to all living beings. Now he is slowly abandoning various different kinds of faults he had, shortcomings he had. So we can see he is changing himself. There are significant behavioral changes happening in himself. Then he abandoned different stealing. He only takes what is given. Abstain from taking what is not given. And then he abandoned in celibacy. Instead, he is practicing celibacy. And then he abandons false speech and he tries his best to speak only the truth. And again, he becomes quite trustworthy and reliable and not a deceiver. He is actually now a trustworthy person. He only speaks truth. Then he abandoned malicious speech and he actually wants to develop concord, peace. He rejoices in the peace among people, maybe within two people, between two people, or among many people. So he is a person who really rejoices seeing that peace or concord. Instead of putting any kind of divisive thought, so he encourages that. Then abandoning harsh speech, so he is speaking softly and using gentle words, lovable words. So this kind of softened mind is now being developed, and so accordingly his words are being changed. Abandoning gossip, now he is very much talk only the necessary things, and he manage his time, not wasting time, and whatever he talks is quite therefore become kind of a treasure, useful, helpful to himself and to the others. And and even now go to some subtle levels, like the Upasampada monks, high ordained monks, so they abstain from harming plants, so that is also included here. And he abandoned all dancing, singing, music, theatrical shows, so those kinds of entertainment parts now he abandons. And using garlands, smartening himself with scents, so those also being abandoned. And then he Uchchasayana Mahasayana, he had abandons all the large and the luxurious kinds of furniture, and he use only the moderate ones. And again, some minor ones, say he doesn't accept raw and grain, doesn't accept women and girls, doesn't accept men and women as slaves, don't accept goats and sheep, fowl and pigs, elephants, cattle, horses, fields and lands. So these are different kinds of acquisitions that sometimes people want to offer, but this monk who is practicing morality, he know what is necessary, what is allowed to accept and what is not allowed to accept. For his own private use, so he is not accepting these kind of things. And he is not involved in buying and selling, and he is not passing messages from one person to another person. And then he doesn't involve with any kind of measurements, trade or any of those. And he is not accepting any bribes, etc. And very much like the sealer, he is perfecting. And after perfecting, or not really after, basically he is now trying to be contented with what he has. So he may have a robe, he may have some alms food, he may have some moderate medicine, and he may have something to live, maybe a kuti, a hatan, whatever. Now he is quite trying to be contented with it. Now a kind of a change. His life become fairly frugal now. Now, so this is the aggregate of sila that Buddha mentioned that he is now practicing. So he is, when he is doing that, Buddha mentioned, possessing this aggregate of noble virtue, he experiences within himself a bliss that is blameless. Now, whenever we are very much going after various luxurious items, and when we become discontented, so we are always trying to get those, whatever we like, either way, either good way or either bad way, either wrong way. So sometimes we get blamed by others, and we may have to do kind of cheating, deceiving others, have to steal things. So likewise, many transgressions can happen. But when one is contented and properly maintain one's sila, so his life become blameless. And not stop there, now Buddha mentioned about the Indriya Sangvara Sila. So what we have discussed is already Patimokkha Sangvara Sila plus the Ajiva Parishuddha Sila. And here, now Buddha explained how one may restrain one's faculties. You know, there are six faculties, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind, using which we do the communication with the outside world. That is how we have kind of a transaction. Now, when you are doing that, how to restrain the faculties? So even though we can see, it is not that we are trying to see as much as possible. We have to see only the proper ones. So in that sense, we have to have kind of a measurement that, or kind of a sense, not to pollute the developed mind. So we are trying our best to purify the mind. So now don't pollute it again. So try to maintain at least available purity. So if you are not guarding the senses, so then if you are looking at various unnecessary things, some mean things, then definitely the mind gets affected. So if the eye faculty unguarded, then evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the eye faculty. He undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. Now he is restraining his eye faculty. Similarly, we can hear various sounds, but have to have some kind of control not to listen things that which is provocating the mind, polluting the mind, disturbing the mind. Similarly, through the nose we can smell various odors, various tastes through the tongue, various tangibles through the body, and various thoughts through the mind. So even when one is using the mind, so we are free to use the mind. But if we are not guarding the mind, then mind may like to think various things, maybe some sexual fantasies, maybe really provocative incidents, maybe some different kinds of mental proliferations about the future. So many different things are available which we can freely think. But the ultimate result is that mind get further polluted, further defiled, and again it's quite difficult again to purify it again. So that's why one has to know the consequences. If one is not properly guarding one's senses, so again and again we are very much like putting ourselves down. We are trying our heart to purify the mind, but again, due to lack of sense restraint, we are not being able to maintain that. So therefore Buddha emphasized here about the noble sense restraint, and there he Buddha mentioned, when he is doing so, he experiences within himself a bliss that is unsullied. Now his mind is not often get defiled, because he is guarding his senses. Through the senses only the various defilements are possible to arouse. Now he is guarding senses, as a result of that, now for a long time, for a considerable period of time, his mind is not sullied with various defilements, not being affected with various defilements, but now mind can be kept fairly pure. It is not through any kind of attainment. It is not through a huge amount or significant amount of wisdom. And not even yet he is talking here the mindfulness. Rather through the sense restrainment, Buddha mentioned that fair amount of calmness and being able to maintain undefiled mind, pure mind, is capable, is possible. Now Buddha slowly put ourselves into the practice. Now here Buddha mentioned the development of the clear comprehension, sampajanya. Basically we can couple it with sati sampajanya, mindfulness and clear comprehension. So Buddha mentioned he is trying to act with full awareness, not negligently. Rather, whatever he do, he is doing it mindfully. He's doing it with whole heart. When going forward and returning, he's trying to be fully aware. When looking ahead and looking away, he's fully aware. And then flexing and extending his limbs, he's fully aware. And then when he's adorning his robes, in inner robe and the outer robe, and handling the ball, that is also with awareness, with mindfulness. And eating, drinking, consuming food, tasting, all different kinds of activities, even defecating, urinating, everything is handled with full awareness. Walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, keeping silent. So everything is now trying to be mindful. So you can see slowly, now it is not just mere adherence to rules and regulations, not mere adherence to Patimokkha rules, but one has to develop mindfulness. One has to practice. One has to guard his mind, guard his faculties. At the same time, he has to develop mindfulness, clear comprehension. Now he is slowly attuned towards the practice. Now, possessing this aggregate of noble virtue and this noble restraint of faculties, and possessing this noble mindfulness and full awareness, he resorts to a secluded resting place. Now, the further practice. The basic foundation is now available. Sila is alright. Then the sense restraint is also maintained. At the same time, now the basic foundational level of mindfulness and clear comprehension, now he has fairly obtained. Now he is going to the concentration practice. Now here, actually the samatha-oriented vipassana is explained. So that's why, first of all, the samatha practices are explained. So after he successfully completed the above, now he is trying to abandon different types of defilements. So basically the five hindrances. Now, five hindrances are you all are familiar with, and covetousness, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and then the doubt. So those are the six, or rather five hindrances. I think I have discussed these things in detail in a particular previous sutta, so I am not going to go in detail. So when one is developing concentration, when the mind is fairly one-pointed, then the sensual desire, or what we call here the covetousness for the world, is fairly subsided. When again and again one's mind is applied to a towards particular, say, kamatthana or primary object, then that avoids or that abandons sloth and torpor. When one is properly examining that particular object, whatever the target object, then whatever the doubt or perplexity, that is also abandoned. And when one's mind is fairly happy there, doing that successfully, so then there is no way for ill will to happen. And when one is satisfied, contented, doing everything successfully, then there is no remorse, there is no regret, there is no restlessness. So this is how actually through the concentration practice one can abandon five hindrances. So after abandoning five hindrances, now Buddha going one after the other about the four jhanas. That also I am not going to explain here, because I feel that we discuss these things in certain other suttas. So Buddha discuss how one may attain first jhana. So we are using that he's now already abandoned the five hindrances, and now he again and again apply his mind towards a particular primary object. So that is the vitakka, and then he carefully examine that object, so that is the vichara. And when things are successful, so he feel rapturous, quite happy, that is piti, sukha, He is now feel happy and contented, and mind is fairly occupied, fairly absorbed to that particular object. So the five jhana factors are available. Now we can say he is in first jhana. So different methods are available, not just one method. Say using anapanasati, one can attain first jhana. Using metta, one can attain first jhana. Using mudita, one can attain first jhana. And say even using asubha bhavana, one can attain first jhana. So many different kinds of objects are possible to attain first jhana. And say even kasinas can be used to attain first jhana. Many methods are available. So it's kind of an absorption practice. We can say you are collecting your mind. Previously mind energy is fairly scattered, but now mind is well focused. Now after practicing that for a while, maybe several months, so he is now quite accustomed, fairly familiar with that first jhana. Now he probably may understand, okay, there are certain factors, those are little vulnerable. Those are closer to hindrances, vitakka and vichara. Again and again mind has to be applied to the meditation object. Again and again the examination has to happen. How about keeping the mind steady, fairly absorbed, thoroughly concentrated? So this is how, so he abandoned certain disadvantages of the first two jhana factors. Now he abandoned those two jhana factors and now he attained second jhana, which is more powerful, more concentrated, and its power is the concentration. And he practicing that, and his mind become more happy, quite rapturous, so the rapture is quite predominant. After some time, probably he may understand, okay, this predominant rapture is fairly gross. It has some impact on the body, certain goosebumps, maybe different kinds of waves, types of massaging kind of things happen in the body. So these are a little disturbing. How about calming down them and having a very contented, happy atmosphere in the body and the mind? Now he understood, or he actually came to a region where his mind is fairly sensitive. Now all that rough kind of rapturous feelings are abandoned. In other terms, rapture is abandoned. Now he attains a third jhana, which is more calm, more quiet, and more contentment is available. He is quite happy. Now he is abiding in the third jhana. Now after practicing that for a while, maybe many months, or if we want, many years, many days, so he may understand, okay, this even happiness is little gross. How about completely taking it to the equanimity? Now he abandons happiness and his mind become fairly equanimous, fully purified with mindfulness, and quite in a very good equilibrium. That's the fourth jhana. Now you can see his mind is slowly improving in mindfulness, improving clear comprehension. All different, hindrances are abandoned, and fairly mind is concentrated. Time to time this concentration is practiced, well collected. So as a result of that, his mind become more and more sensitive in other terms. So sensitivity of the mind become improved. So he can now recognize even subtle defilements because sensitivity is improved. And when his mind reaches this kind of a state, Buddha mentioned, it is purified, it is bright, unblemished, rid of imperfections, malleable, wieldy, steady, attained to imperturbability. And now the fairly good environment is available in the mind. Very positive environment where you can use it to any kind of a work is there. Now Buddha mentioned he is using that to recognize various states and their operation. So in order to do that, actually he has to soften his mind. He has to reduce the concentration. He has to allow it to come to the surface. Allow it to come to the what we call the upachara samadhi. So that he is aware What are the various defilements? What are the certain stress, tensions, little pains, and all sorts of different suffering available in the body and in the mind? So there he recognized, okay, there is suffering. It is not that I am suffering, rather there is a friction, there is uneasiness, maybe there is discontent, there is little bit of frustration, there is minor pains. So likewise, he is looking at these different pains, suffering, discontent, etc. objectively, not taking things personally, rather maintaining a little gap. So he is able to look at them objectively. So that is quite important. There is suffering. Idam dukkhang ariya satchang. So likewise, so it is not that I am suffering, rather there is suffering. So this statement is extremely important. So whenever we go through some suffering, so if we can look at it objectively, take step back and look at it objectively. Looking at it like a second person, not as you are suffering, but there is suffering. Suffering is suffering. It's not my suffering. It is not happened because of him. Rather, this is suffering. There is suffering. So this statement is therefore, worth paying our attention. And when you fully understand that suffering, so Buddha mentioned, so now look at what is the cause. So there is desire. So as the root cause of suffering, now probably there is a kind of a desire in the mind. So that too has to be understood. Tanha, kind of a craving for a different state. Say you are in one state and you are not satisfied, but you are looking for something different. You are searching for something different. You are discontent here. But now you are aspiring, you are trying to become someone else. So tanha is operating. Maybe sensual desire, maybe desire to become or want to get rid of the existing state. Three kinds of tanha. Now he understands, okay, what is the friction available in the mind? Why this friction happen? What this mind is looking for? What is the desire? So he do kind of introspection and he understand, okay, there is this kind of a desire. Now then what he does, he is now abandoning that desire, relinquish that desire, and as a result of that, again mind become fairly peaceful. Now no agitation, no frustration, now mind is peaceful. Now that is the cessation of suffering, and temporarily there is no suffering. Now he is entertaining, or maybe we can say experiencing, the third truth, that is the cessation of suffering. Now this practice has to be cultivated or repeated many, many times. Whatever the way that you are experiencing suffering, so that has to be understood, and then the reason has to be understood and then abandoned. Then there is no suffering for some time, and there you have to dwell, you have to experience, and that cycle has to be repeated again and again. So in the Satipatthana practice, so this is what we are trying to do. So with the prepared skills, mindfulness, concentration, now you are observing the suffering, observing the unsatisfactoriness, the nature of the body, nature of the feelings, nature of various thoughts, different perceptions. So this is in a way examination of suffering, examination of the dukkha satcha. Now when one is further and further understanding that, so automatically the abandonment happens. Because we grasp, we hold, because we don't have wisdom. But the thorough investigation helps us to develop that wisdom. So as a result of that, the abandonment or the letting go is quite natural. So the second noble truth is slowly implemented by abandoning things. And it is being fairly easy because you already have a deep understanding about things as they truly are. It is not that you do kind of a forceful abandoning, forceful letting go, rather Now it is based on proper wisdom. Through wisdom, you know it is not worthy of holding, not worthy of attaching, not worthy of grasping. So the letting go process would become more and more smooth. So once the letting go has happened, mind become calm, peaceful, no stress. So then one is experiencing a fair amount of calmness, what we can say the cessation of suffering, absence of suffering. And if he is doing that in a proper manner, so even the mind completely liberate from different desires. No desires at all. The mind is temporarily fully liberated, temporarily cleansed, we can say, purified. But the process has to do again and again, because one may understand, even though mind has temporarily purified, I can't maintain it. Why? Still the potential is available, still the latent tendencies are available to get defiled. Various latent tendencies. Kamasava, bhavasava, avijjasava. We can say the taints, asavas. So, till we have kamasava, till we have the taint of sensual desire, very much like underlying, so it time to time get activated. As a result of that, mind get occupied with various sensual desires and corresponding various sensual images, beautiful images, beautiful sounds, and different kinds of sense chords may occupy the mind, because internally this taint of sensual desire is available. Similarly, if there is any desire to become, at the moment you are not satisfied. Always there is a desire to become someone, achieve something, change something. Accepting the way it is not possible, because there's an ongoing urge, ongoing frustration, ongoing inclination towards the next moment. The present moment is not satisfied. You are searching for a different moment, different experience, and you want to become something. So the bhavatanha. So that is the bhavasava, where you want to become, you want to live more, experience more. So that is the underlying tendency is bhavasava, and how it manifests is like always you want to become someone, always you want to experience a different thing, not satisfied in the present moment, not contented in this present moment, always have kind of an inclination towards a future moment, future event. So that is how one may recognize, okay, there are still latent tendencies available in the mind, which is always provocating the mind, frustrating the mind, agitating the mind. And again, the last one, that is the avijja. So that is the one actually more relevant to today's topic. So one understood, okay, there is I-making happens. There is a kind of individuation, personality, ego, all these kinds of different thoughts are available in the mind. Time to time, such thoughts are appearing in the mind. I did that, I want that, I am the owner, I am the landlord, I am the boss, I have so much of fields, I have so many vehicles, I have this designation, I am a rich person, I am a wealthy person, I am a strong person. So all different kinds of I-making and different kinds of possession, thinking that I have, this is mine. So all sorts of I-making, mind-making, and I am conceit. So these are very subtle. Actually, recognizing anger, recognizing lust, recognizing jealousy, miserliness, so those may be in a way straightforward when we compare to this I-making, mind-making, and I am conceit. So that is why we can say it is the more subtle kind of vipassana, that one is understanding how this is happening. And here a little more elaboration has done, and this can happen with regard to the body and with regard to different external signs. So whenever through eyes you see something, so there may be eye making happen. There may be a desire to possess it. I want it, or this is mine. Say you are looking at your car or whatever you have, and immediately, okay, this is my car. So this is my beautiful car. This is my brand new car. Oh, this is my old car. I want to get rid of it. Now I want to buy a new car. Oh, I better buy an electric car because no fuel today. So many different thoughts may emerge from the mind because we have a kind of a possessiveness in the mind. We are relating that whatever the external object to us, it belong to me, or it doesn't belong to me. So the sense, I sense, is there. Always we are thinking, keeping the I in the center. So kind of an ego-based thinking. So this is where I am is there. I am conceit is very much like the deeply rooted center of thinking, and with respect to that deeply rooted center, we are thinking, we are promoting different kinds of concealment. Conceiving, I am rich, I am happy, I am unhappy, I am bad, I am injured. So I am, always, I is there. So every time each thought is promoting Sakkāya-ditthi, promoting personality view. So if one is able to recognize this eye-making, mind-making, so slowly it is very much like disclaiming those thoughts. So you have to be vigilant on the mind. So when these thoughts are coming and they are promoting a person, suppose say you helped help one of your friend. So it has happened maybe 1 week ago. But while you are traveling on the bus, say maybe you are having a little free time, so maybe certain thoughts with respect to that incident can happen to your mind, and now it is very much like promoting a person, promoting a self within you. So you are mapping, so on that day I am the one helped him. So he was in a trouble, but I am the one who saved him. I am the one really helped him. So now you are promoting a little I, a person. So you have a kind of an underlying belief that there is a person here, there is an individual here, I am here. I was there as well. I was there in the past. Now I am here. So this same I helped that particular person. So this kind of thinking is in a way promoting a self. So these are very difficult in a way. Now, this can happen either with respect to wholesome deeds or unwholesome deeds. So eye making, mind making, these things can happen with respect to wholesome deeds as well as the unwholesome deeds. And actually, when we are getting more and more virtuous, so it become less and less unwholesome deeds. But the wholesome deeds also can promote a person. So then the practice is not that you become an entirely wholesome person, or you become entirely thinking only about the wholesome thoughts. So that would be the first kind of an understanding, or first kind of an inclination we have. But later one may understand even these wholesome thoughts are impermanent. Wholesome thoughts are unsatisfactory, non-governable, they are beyond my control, they are merely conditioned phenomena. Unwholesome thoughts are also conditioned. They are also we can't depend on. They are also very much uncontrollable. There is no any essence. So you now abandon both wholesome and unwholesome, recognizing that both are conditioned, both sides are conditioned. Now this is how we, so our minds may be attuned towards the unconditioned. Now we are trying to keep the mind unconditioned, keep the mind pure, not allowing it to get colored or conditioned through the external experience. Or you are trying to keep the mind in the middle, not going to the wholesome extreme and not going to the unwholesome extreme. How about keeping in the middle, maintaining equanimity towards all the sankhara? all different kind of condition phenomena are happening, and you know that they are impermanent, no point of desiring them, no point of attracting to them, and no point of trying to get rid of them, because they will go. They are, that is their nature, they are impermanent, they are inherently impermanent. I don't need to push them away, because they are inherently impermanent. It's a matter of being little patient till they pass away. Now you are very much trying to maintain a very peaceful, equanimous, unconditioned, unattached type of mind. And probably we may more and more understand how eye-making, mind-making can happen. And then and there you are simply disclaiming that when such thought is happening. So likewise, so this person, this particular so-called monk, have practiced, and as a result of that, all these different kinds of eye-making, mind-making, I am conceit, those things are also eliminated. And so that is how he answered the question. Now this is the fifth question, and then it is mentioned saying good, because one may delight and rejoice in that bhikkhu's words. Having done so, one should say to him, it is a gain for us, friend, it is a great gain for us, friend, that we see such a companion in the holy life as the Venerable One. Now this is actually the end of the sutta, but as I mentioned, it only covered five purifications, but there is another one suggested by the commentary, so we'll discuss that on the next week. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
For all of the participants, if you'd like to participate and have a question for the Q&A, please raise your hand, or you can also send them via the chat. So, Bhante, I've received a written question that's quite long, so I've also sent it to you via the chat. So it says, respected Bhante, what is Rupa Raga? What kind of Rupa Raga is experienced by a Puttajana? And what kind of Rupa Raga is experienced by an Anagami? I imagine there's a difference. Same question for Aruba Raga. What is Aruba Raga? What kind of Aruga Raga is experienced by a Puttajana? And what kind of Aruba Raga is experienced by an Anagami? My ideal so far is that Rupa Raga could be, for example, energy or vibrations one can feel, and that Aruba Raga is a merely mental or thought-related phenomenon. I don't expect full clear answers, only wish to understand a little better, please. Examples very welcomed. Thank you, respected Bhante, Thiruvan Sennai.
Yeah, actually the Rupa Raga and Arupa Raga, with respect to Puttajana, actually, it can be very much one is attaining jhana. Say, a Puttajana can attain jhana. Say, if he is attaining first jhana, second, third, fourth, so those are the rupa jhanas, what we call. And those are fairly blissful and new sort of domain, new sort of experience, and desirable in a way. So one is desiring, one is possible to have a desire to those states, because one can completely escape from this sensual world. So when one is in the first jhana, for example, so all the hindrances are abandoned. It's a very blissful state. So therefore, one may practice in order to attain first jhana. So in a way, this kind of a rupa raga for a, say, Puttajana. Similarly, if one can attain arupa jhana, so that is completely removing even a sense of rupa, even a sense of matter, materiality. So mind is fully abandoned all the frictions with respect to the body and fully absorbed in the arupa jhana. So that is also a desirable state. So one can have a desire for that. And being a Puttajana, one can attain that and can desire for that. But on the other hand, if you consider an anagami, So these two also still available in Anagami, yes, yeah. Because the Kamaraga, Patiga, so those are the ones abandoned when one become an Anagami. That is why he is not returning to the sense world, but rather the very subtle level of Ruparaga and Aruparaga, desiring for these very conscious and very subtle conscious states of mind are possible even in the Anagami nobles. So that's why those are coming under the Uddhambhagya Sanyojana, the utter latent tendencies, Sanyojanas, fetters, because those are very subtle, and one is now not interested about gross kind of sensual gratification. Rather, how about having a very subtle satisfaction in the mind, very subtle absorption in the mind, attainment in the mind, experience in the mind? So this kind of an experience is therefore deeply available, subtly available. So that is why even that is available in the Anagami. So when one become an Arahant only, Buddha mentions, so these two are abandoned.
So essentially,
yeah,
the
just a
question.
small comment, one moment, yeah.
The question was asking, is there a difference between Putujjanas
Yeah,
Sanyojana and Arya Sanyojana?
I think, okay, now he's asking, is there any difference between Putujjanas Sanyojanas and Arya Sanyojanas? Now, I think there may be, because if one attained these jhanas as a Putujjana, so he may blindly grasp those, and this grasping may be so strong. The way he attained jhana and an Arya attained jhana may be fairly different. It's not the same, because the Putujjana, his grasping power is too high, so he may strongly grasp even the meditation object. Say, for example, if he is using jhana, sorry, if he is using kasina to attain even the what you say, the arupa jhana, so he may absorb very strongly, hold the thing very strongly, absorb the thing very strongly. But on the other hand, the noble, so since he already has experienced a fair amount of purification, so his detachment is so high, dispassion is so high, so therefore, even though he has some subtle grasping towards the Arupa Jhana, but his way of attaining that may be very subtle, very soft, very delicate. So there may be a significant change, significant difference between how a Putujjana attained jhana and he has this Ruparaga and Aruparaga, and how a kind of a, say, Aryapuggala may have a subtle Ruparaga and Aruparaga. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. For the first question, I'd like to invite Priya. You may unmute.
Good one, Sarmai Bhante. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Bhante, I want to share my meditation experience and I seek your advice. In my walking meditation, in general, I just start with observing, raising, moving, and placing, and then I keep on observing whatever arises. But recently, actually, past week, I feel like mind is like above my head, and then consciousness is switching more toward watching the mind. It's going in between. Legs just walk by itself, and then consciousness goes in between mind, watching the mind, and feet, but it going more towards the mind. I don't know whether I should let whatever happen to happen, or should I keep watching feet.
No, actually, what is happening is good, because now it is not that mind is thoroughly or very closely attached to the sense experience. Rather, it is maintaining a little bit of distance and doing the watching part. So that is how it is slowly emerging from the experience, and now having a kind of a little separation is now happening. Little dispassion is now developing. So this is how it is actually detachment is manifesting, and ultimately it becomes nibbida and say disenchantment, and ultimately mind may completely let it go. So therefore, let it happen. You don't need to change anything. You don't need to force your mind to try to closely examine as you did before. Rather, now mind is doing kind of a, maybe a little bit of a passive kind of observation. Let it happen.
Yeah, Bhante, in my sitting meditation, I barely sense breath, but I can feel sensations right away, a lot of sensations. And again, then mind switch to observe mind, and then it happened one day like, and then I saw some patterns, like I did not pay attention to that, and then like a screen was there, and then it became expanded, and then there's nothing. So I was, mind was just sitting there watching, and then I remember two thoughts came. One I don't remember, the other one I remember. But it was like they are like very calm and very peaceful and quite happy, actually. I wouldn't say happy, but very comfortable. So I was there for around 45 minutes, but I could stay longer if I wanted. But I had to get up. And then next day I tried to repeat the same thing.
No.
But...
Yeah, that is when actually you have kind of an expectation and kind of an attachment towards that experience, then it is unlikely
okay.
to happen. Then it is unlikely to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's
okay.
a matter of just continuing. I mean, these are different kinds of experiences that we come across on the path. So, I mean, if we have kind of an attachment towards that, and if we are desiring and trying to achieve it again and again, so that is something not necessary. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
During my daily activities, again, mind is more toward observing the mind. It's, like earlier, I pay attention to all my activities, like touch sensations and those things, and now it's like it's not. Doing. I mean, it's mostly like watching the mind, and then sometimes I feel like, oh, I forgot to, you know, watch my sensations. Like
No. I mean, actually, if automatically, very naturally, it is now going for this observation of the mind, let it happen. No problem.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Bhattika for the next question, please.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
My question first is on my walking meditation. I spoke with Bhante Dhammadeva too, and he said that I should increase my movements because like the walking and other things that I'm doing and observe, and I have increased this walking to more than an hour. I mean, the meditation to an hour, the satmana is an hour, but I'm saying that when I'm normally walking, also I sometimes feel the sensations. Sometimes I do it automatically. It comes the sensation, the attention goes automatically to the feet. Not all the time, but sometimes to the sole of the feet. So I have increased that automatically by doing the daily, during the daily walking, not only the one sapna. Now, when I'm doing this, I feel sensations elsewhere, but I feel the sensations elsewhere when I'm doing other things too. Like, for example, just now listening to your talk, I'm feeling the sensations. Last time when I was doing the sitting meditation and the breath had gone down to a very, very subtle gape, and I couldn't feel it in the area of the nose and the upper lip, but I'm feeling that there is some kind of a breath which I can't distinguish as in breath or out breath, but like a wave somewhere inside the body. At that time I was getting these other sensations, but I was not focusing aware of the other sensations. I was trying to find the breath, and he told me no, I should let go of that and instead be with the other sensations. Now I'm doing that automatically whenever there is these sensations coming, when I'm doing other things like breathing awareness, or whether I'm doing listening to Banam like now, or if I'm doing just walking, I notice it, those sensations, and I'm aware of them. How much time now should I be spending on breathing awareness formal and walking formal? Is 1 hour what I should be doing?
Yeah, that would be fine. Yeah, that's fine. Just keep it for the time being. I mean, there are also, for example, while walking, now you may pay more attention to various sensations, because then it is not, there is no big difference between your sitting session and the walking session, because while in the sitting session you experience various sensations and you are trying to observe them, investigate them, and similarly while in the walking also you are doing the same thing. Actually, we may change the postures, but the activity what we are doing, the observation what we do, is quite similar.
So these are sensations in the body.
Yes, yes.
Now, if I sometimes the thoughts are less, but sometimes a thought might come, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there is feeling attached to that thought, I can see that also.
Good, good. So look at that as well. Look at that as well. I mean, if you feel that, okay, now have looked at sensations for a while, and you feel that I better look at thoughts, no harm, no problem. Because we are anyway dealing with satipatthana, so we can change from one satipatthana to the other satipatthana when we are fairly confident. Nothing to worry.
Should I have to wait for it to change automatically, or should I do it?
No, when you are confident, you can do it. I mean, as you wish. Otherwise, let it happen naturally. So that is the smooth and natural way. But when you are conversant on each and every satipatthana, so you can jump between the others. I mean, at your will.
Thank you. But the formal should be always 1 hour, 1 hour,
right? Yeah, that is also, you can do smoothly, rigidly. Now, say for example, you are trying to keep 1 hour. So during that 1 hour, say for example, after 45 minutes, if you feel okay, now the session has naturally ended. There are certain signs that... Yeah, then you better stop.
It's shorter.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Then you better stop. It is not that now we are trying to formally stick to a very tight schedule. Rather, we are now recognize these patterns available in the mind, the how it is manifesting, maybe some days, maybe 40 minutes, some days 50 minutes, some days 1 hour, maybe another day, a little bit more than 1 hour. Now, these things can vary. Now, accordingly, we adjust our schedule.
And if I observe some feeling in the mind or emotion in the mind, should I examine that and remain with that, or should I abandon it by explaining to the sensation.
No, I think it is better now you can examine it. Do a detached examination, then slowly you are able to even learn from that, how that emotion has grown to that level, what are the previous states that you have came through, what are the fabrications that you introduced to this state. So likewise, our own involvement, our own fabrications can be recognized by doing a very kind of relaxed examination.
Thank you very much. My
yeah,
pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
Okay,
thank you.
I'd
like to invite Don for the next question, please.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante, for the Dhamma talk today.
Yeah.
Bhante, I actually have the question, but when I listen to the two questions about the walking meditation, I thought of clarifying something small before I go to the question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
But when I do the walking meditation, yes, I start with the awareness of the leg, the feet, and slowly, of course, that becomes like natural law is there, but my mind is now, is maybe in some thoughts, but I know the thoughts, and then, so it will be, you know, like switching between the two. And especially like, towards the like middle or the second half, the last half of the walking, I make it very, very slow, so that kind of like a way of seeing my mind behavior. So I see more of like, yes, in addition to the awareness of the feet, what I am aware is that my mind is going and think what is happening in my mind. Is that?
Sure, fine, no problem. Yeah, because now in the first half of your meditation, you are refining your faculties, you are developing your faculties, and after the second half, now you have already refined, sharpened faculties, and it is capable of looking at thoughts without being driven by thoughts. So therefore, I mean, you can do it.
Yes, I can see something coming in, and then
yeah.
I can see, okay, now it's gone, something else coming in, now there's nothing.
Correct.
So,
correct. Yeah.
Yes.
You can
okay.
You can continue. That would be even more, beneficial, and you can do that. And assume that you can even, if you can experience absence of thoughts, then you, I mean, even without putting yourself back to the sensations, see whether you can maintain your mind free from anything. Kind of a challenge, kind
okay.
of a very interesting investigation then.
Yes, that will be.
Yeah.
Okay, for the question, Bhante, now in the today's Dhamma sermon, I hear about these jhanas, and also I think in one of the jhana, I think it's the fourth jhana that we mentioned, is that there will be we'll be looking equanimously to our pains or pleasure.
No, actually in the jhana level, it's very much like pain and pleasure. Those things are also very much vanished because the power of the concentration. But when you are fairly looking at the pain and pleasure and all these different feelings, we can't say we are very much deeply involved in the concentration. Rather, mind is little loosened the concentration, but the clarity of the mind is available. It is not disturbed. Necessary amount of concentration is available, but not fully overwhelmed by the concentration. Not governed by the concentration, we can say.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's, because Padme, I can see the similar behavior in when I'm doing a vipassana in let's say in a Paryanga meditation, sitting meditation, where I would have no pain and no pleasure at all, and I'm very equanimous. I kind of like have no physical pain also, and I am now with the mind behavior. So is that some kind of a jhana stage too? Because I know like in vipassana, I think we do not kind of give emphasis to jhanas.
No, that is another kind of a good question. Now you see, in samatha we are talking jhana without much emphasis to wisdom practice. Rather, we are developing mindfulness and concentration, and now mind stop in a particular object. Mind, maybe we can say, latch onto a particular object. But on the other hand, say for example, you do vipassana practice where the object is constantly changing and you are still momentarily with that object and observing its different phenomena, different characteristics. So there are also these jhana factors are available. So that is why actually certain teachers, say for example, Sayadaw U Pandita, so in his book, In This Very Life, so there he actually find out this similarity, this parallelism between the samatha jhana and the vipassana jhana. So we can call it as vipassana jhana, where the object is constantly changing, but you are momentarily there again and again you are applying your mind to that object, examining that object, and you feel rapturous, you feel happy because things are happening properly. And there is no distractions, there is no any restless or neglect, so all the hindrances are subsided. So all the necessary qualities of a jhana is available. So it is, by the way, the difference is you are not absorbed, you have not selected the particular object. Whatever your observation is actually that observing object, observee. So that is constantly changing, and even it is changing as a one object or changing entirely to a different object even. So, but the mind is fairly focused, unwavering, and no distractions. So therefore we can even consider that as a jhana. So that is why we particularly call it as a vipassana jhana. And it also in different levels, what I have explained to you is very much similar to the first jhana, but later it can change to the second jhana at a later stage. Say you are examining certain thing, and now no need to again and again jump to that object. It is very much like you do a kind of cross examination, or that object has completely disappeared and you are simply resting. So likewise, there are certain parallelism we can see in the vipassana as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. Thank you
okay.
so much. Much
yeah.
ministry.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Now, Bhante, you were talking about this monk who went into the various dhyanic levels, and then he was equanimous, he went into that fourth level, and then his mind was bright and steady. Now, at that level, he went into the knowledge of the destruction of the tail. So, at that level, how does he go into the destruction of the tail? Because he's now in a very good level, and is he just thinking of the tail? So, what is he doing there? Is he doing vipassana? Or?
Yeah, he's doing vipassana. But actually, even though this sutta explained that he starts this practice only after attaining fourth jhana, so it is not a must. It is not a must.
Yeah.
There are various other suttas like Attakanagara Sutta, likewise many suttas are there. So there are even Buddha mentioned, Venerable Ananda mentioned, even after attaining first jhana, and if you fairly consolidate in that, you can practice this vipassana. After reaching second jhana, still you can do. After attaining third jhana, you can do. After attaining fourth jhana, you can do. But in this sutta, the example is taken as one attained fourth jhana and then start practicing vipassana. So therefore, different stages are there. And even without attaining first jhana, you can do. That is what Mahasaya Sayadaw and certain, say, vipassana teachers are explaining. So when your mind is fairly stable, no distractions, and you are capable of maintaining your mind for a considerable period of mind on a selected object, then you can actually start vipassana.
So, when he's talking about the Tetha Kamasava, Bhavasavana and the Avijasava, does he just go back to experiences in the past? Or
no, no,
yeah,
no. No,
Yeah.
that's why. Now, actually, once you attain this, any kind of this kind of a state, then you are assume that you consolidate that and you feel confident on that now. So that becomes kind of a base, and you have some experiential understanding about this base, and which is fairly stable, free from any hindrance, free from any defilement. So you are experientially understood about the purity of the mind. Now you allow, now you little allow the mind to come to the surface. You relax your concentration. You leave it, you are loosening your concentration. Now again, a kind of a grasping can happen. Again, little bit of signs may appear in the mind. A little bit of disturbances appear in the mind. So that is where, again, the taints are in operation. Now, so far, so far, I mean, because of the concentration, so those are very much like subsided. Once you loosen your grip, now slowly different defilements are popping up. Since you are having a very good understanding about the pure state of mind, you can quickly recognize these subtle changes now emerging in the mind.
So you have to experience it to actually, because at that concentrated level you can't experience, but as you're saying, you have to then let go a little bit and then allow these things to function, to actually look at them.
That's right, yes. Because now when the taints are fully in a subsided or inactive state, then I mean their operation is not visible.
So you're not that he's going to the past and thinking, well,
not at all.
He had this change in the past, but he's actually experiencing.
Yes,
he has
to
experience it to actually to think about it, right?
To notice. Vipassana. You have to notice that.
Because then when he goes into the sort of the when he goes from this comfortable bright state, he's going now to a lesser thing, then he probably feels he wants to go back to that original place of brilliance, and then he feels that this is the karma asava that he's experiencing. Would that be right if I said that?
We can say, like, say for example, say he's in a kind of, as you said, maybe a very peaceful, brilliant state, but now he's loosening his concentration, he's little allowing the mind to freely move. Now assume that there's a thought popping up, or there's a mental image appearing in the mind with respect to some kind of a person that you have associated, and through that association that you got a lot of pleasure. So that image may appear in the mind. So that is actually a one example of a manifestation of karmasava.
Okay. So something has to manifest, and he wants to grasp that.
Yes. And again, say for example, while they are, again, kind of a desire may appear in the mind, okay, I want to become a sotapan, I want to become an arahant. So this is the operation of the bhavasava. Because at the moment you are not fully satisfied, fully contented, rather you want to become someone. Or maybe I want to become a rich person. So likewise, a subtle operation of becoming process. Basically, I mean, it is not, I mean, say for example, in this case, most probably it may be a thought, but in the previous case, how the bhavasava may, the karmasava may manifest, even one can notice that using the occupation of a kind of an image, kind of a mental image, kind of a pleasurable mental image, or maybe a kind of a sign of a sound, which assume that kind of a beautiful song immediately come into the mind. So that is an indication that you still have certain attachments towards this sensual world.
And then can you, at that level, can you give me an example of the avijja that comes into play?
Yeah, that is I making, mind making, and I am.
That is the bhava.
No. That is bhava plus I make, is bhava plus avijja. So you feel that I am here, I am here, I am here, I am experiencing jhana, I am doing vipassana. So wherever the feeling, wherever the personality manifestation happen, so you feel as a person, you feel as an individual, you feel that I am. So that is another subtle thought we can say. You feel kind of a conceiving thought. So that operates through avijja actually.
Is that a combination of Baba and avijja?
Definitely. Definitely. We can say so.
No?
Yeah. I mean, say.
Because I was under the impression that when you make a self, then you are automatically having a Baba asava.
True. So this so whenever you are doing, Baba asava manifests. So avijja asava is already inherently available
there.
Because
they work together, right?
Yes, work together, and even in the karma asava, avijja is also there. Now that is, it depends on to which area that you have given your attention or which one is more prominent. Say for example, sometimes say you have a desire, I want to have a chocolate. Say you are now feeling little tired, little bored in your practice. Now you feel, get a kind of a thought, I want to have a chocolate. You can interpret as kind of a bhavasava. Sorry, kamasava.
Kamasava.
But on the other hand, I want to have. So that indicates kind of a person as well.
Yes.
That is
avijjasava.
Yeah, they are fairly closely interrelated. Yes.
So then only he came to the conclusion of the Four Noble Truths, right? After that, only that he came to the thought of the Four went into the path of Four Noble Truths. Is that correct if I said that?
I don't know. It's difficult to say kind of a linearly, this may happen first, then it may happen like this, like that. Things can happen many different ways. But on the other hand, recognizing pain, say while you are there, maybe you are recognizing a little pain available in your body, little frustration in your mind, say uneasiness in your mind. So all this comes under the dukkha satcha. Say even if you start kaya anupassana, even if you start vedana anupassana, chitta anupassana. So these are all different types of dukkha.
Yeah, dukkha-dukkata that is.
Yeah, dukkha-dukkata, viparinama dukkha, sankhara dukkha. So you do, a little thought coming and then you are adding that. You are doing various fabrications. So this is sankhara dukkha. So you didn't let go of that as it is. You didn't stop there. But you do little constructions. How you are adding, multiplying, you are coloring it. So all these are sankhara dukkha.
Understand.
Yes.
Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Bhante, may I ask one more question?
Sure.
I'd like to clarify meditation experience. So similar to some of the yogis earlier, so when I started my Vipassana meditation session, in the beginning, the mind was much more focused on awareness of the body, and then it then started naturally to shift more towards noticing the mind, and then noticing all of, many other senses, hearing sounds, but more and more the mind goes to knowing what's arising in the mind, and there's strong, clear comprehension of watching the entire process from just an unformed thought, but I can feel that there is a thought that's kind of bubbling, and there is greed arising and mind wanting to find something to grasp onto, and then I see, the actual forming of the thought, and then I also then see, there's no power given to the thought, and so it naturally starts to fade and lessen, and then eventually disappears, and then the next thing comes along.
Right.
So there's a combination of all kinds of different defilements, from starting with more gross, like anger, to then, or maybe not so much anger, but like dissatisfaction through to greed and then self-making and then just wandering thoughts, and all of this is clear. But more and more, as I'm noticing all of these different things, and more the mind is focusing on phenomenon that's arising in the mind and less so on any other phenomenon,
yeah,
then the thoughts become less and less frequent.
Correct. That's right.
There's just awareness and really not much else.
Correct.
And there's also this sense of, you know, a very subtle sense of joy, peace that's arising. But is this, Bhante, falling more into developing concentration, or am I still on the path for vipassana?
Yeah, actually, once you are experiencing very less thoughts, so actually you came through vipassana path, and ultimately, as you mentioned, okay, now there is no thought as well, no thought at all. Now you simply abide by that, you simply be there. We can say, I mean, you came through vipassana path, but now mind is very much unshaken, mind has become quiet, still. So you need to consolidate this. You don't need to worry whether it is kind of a samatha. Actually, later we can change it to samatha also. That is what Buddha advocated even. Now, if you can remember what you call this Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, so that is very well explained. So you are coming through this equanimous state through many different paths. Either say you are doing observing various sensations, and ultimately mind can come to this non-grasping equanimous state, no thoughts. So you are experiencing different feelings, and they come and go, and ultimately they cease, and again mind may reach this this equanimous state. Suppose you are observing mind, as you said. Now you are experiencing one after the other. Now all disappeared. Now there is an absence of thoughts. Mind become equanimous and non-grasping state. Different paths are available. But later, once you are confident on this state, slowly you need to abide by that. You need to dwell in that. You have to familiarize with that state. So when you are fairly confident that, you can even neglect the path. Path in the sense the different mechanisms that you achieve it, you can quickly jump into it, we can quickly plunge into it. So this is how we are eradicating, or rather we are forgetting about the diversity of different approaches. Rather now we are in the kind of a unity of the equanimity, but we then that is very much like samatha. Yes.
Okay, so Bhante, is it accurate to understand that in that state where there's really, you know, no other phenomena really arising, is that a state of mind just letting go and being at peace with non-grasping?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me show that also in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta. I think I already discussed this with you. So if you can see here, in the latter part, so equanimity is here in the vipassana side. So here in the equanimity, it is twofold. Equanimity based on diversity and equanimity based on unity. So what we have at the beginning is this, equanimity based on diversity. That's what I have experienced. Maybe you can come to that kaya anupassana, through vedana anupassana, through chitta anupassana, or maybe using different sense bases, many different ways. Once you achieve that, once you are confident in that, you can forget about that different mechanism, and you can plunge into that again and again. Now it is very much like inner unity. So this Buddha equalizes with either what you call the akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, nevasanyanasanyayatana. So very much like equanimity, boundless, and arupa, fairly closer to the arupa jhana levels. So fairly the samatha practice in a way.
Okay.
Thank you, Bhante, for clarifying. Yes. Okay, I think we have come to the conclusion of today's sutta teaching session. So thank you very much for active participation. So we all have examined Buddha's teaching, and we try to verify that, we try to learn from that. And through that, we were able to accumulate some merits. We'll share these merits with all the past living relatives. We share these merits with all the celestial beings. And we share these merits with all the beings who are in need of merits. Let's wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. While keeping these good wishes, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanam. Satta ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.